You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
This week has seen large discussions on New Zealand First's announcement that if they win the election, they plan to buy BNZ Bank and nationalise it into Kiwi Bank, a plan likely to cost around $30 billion and has been completely ruled out by their coalition partner in the National Party. Despite this, it sparked conversations around how we should be engaging with our banking sector, the vast majority of it dominated by Australian-owned banks. And critics fear that National Party changes to the accommodation supplement is going to hit poor working families at a time they're already doing it rough, nullifying other support that they're offering the rest of the country more broadly, repeating a pattern of policies that hurt poorer communities worse than the rich. So for our weekly catch-up with the Green Party, I spoke with MP Ricardo Menendez March about what impacts he saw would come from the restrictions to the income eligibility for the accommodation supplement. And we then discussed New Zealand First policy to buy BNZ Bank and whether minor parties get to overpromise if they are constrained by the major parties in power that they will inevitably work with.
Kia ora, Ricardo. Welcome to the show.
Kia ora. Thank you for having me.
I want to start us off today. I noticed some comments that you made in the media about the accommodation supplement changes that we're going through and how they might cancel out support for the cost of living crisis at this time. And I wanted you to maybe jump into that a little bit.
Yeah, so the government, as part of the cost-saving measures, is targeting low-income working families as well as people on the benefit who need the accommodation supplement. And these are homeowners who need the accommodation supplement to meet their, for example, cost of the mortgage. We're talking about low-income people, almost 10,000 households. Most of them will be people with children who will be on average up to $59 a week off. And for families with children, the average will be $42 a week. That's a huge loss for low-income people. And it's going to be a blow for thousands of families' abilities to survive.
Functionally speaking, what are the changes to the accommodation supplement that are creating this effect?
Yeah, so the accommodation supplement has been around for a while, and it's there to recognize that, you know, people may have a high cost to their accommodation costs compared to their income. Now, so people can normally access it once their accommodation costs exceed 30% of their income, which is what internationally has often been described as what's deemed affordable. So if you're spending more than 30% of your income on, say, your rent, your mortgage, or board payments, that's deemed to be unaffordable housing. They're raising the threshold from 30% to 40% for people who are homeowners, maybe on low income, but have high accommodation costs. And we're talking about, for example, people who are first-time homeowners who may have suddenly lost their job or may have fallen sick and one of the partners may have fallen sick, and that could put in jeopardy their ability to keep their home, to keep roots in their community and to make ends meet. And so to move the threshold literally leaves thousands of families potentially without the ability to cover their basic essentials, which is exactly what the ministry advised the government about.
It seems that these changes are going to be pushed through. What does it say about the benefits that are being provided now, the ones that you spoke about that are sort of being proposed in the sense that the government is saying that they're helping, but in the same way putting forward these proposals that are taking away about the same amount of support from some people?
Yeah, I mean, the changes to the accommodation supplement effectively will take place shortly after the support for the fuel crisis ends. These are the very same families that would have been needing the support to deal with the fuel crisis. It's almost like they're giving one hand, taking with another. And we're always told there isn't enough to address poverty. There isn't enough to guarantee affordable housing. There isn't enough to have affordable health care. And yet on the same breath, they're telling us there's $12 billion for military equipment, got several billions of dollars for mega landlords and fossil fuel companies. And yet this is another example that instead of taxing the wealthy few, they're going after low and middle income working families. And I want to note that the government was literally advised in the supplementary evidence provided by the ministry, and I literally quote that, you know, this could lead to some homeowners experiencing an increased risk of housing insecurity and financial stress, as they will be required to contribute more towards their accommodation costs. And they even got warned that homeowners will have less money available for spending on necessities such as food, clothing, and transport. This is effectively the government stripping families of their ability to survive, while, you know, in the name of, you know, affordable public services, while at the same time spending billions of dollars on things that do not improve people's livelihoods. So it just speaks of their priorities, which are upside down.
I'm reminded at this point in time of the tax cuts that happened at the beginning of the government's term, and the borrowing that was associated with it appeared almost equivalent. You know, it was the same amount. Mm. It seems interesting, yeah, as you say, that there's a lot of money that might be available for pursuing their objectives, but not necessarily for supporting Kiwis that are going through it hard at the moment.
Well, that's right. And even with the tax cuts, right, we know that the biggest benefiters of the tax cuts were people on high incomes. And this once again speaks that we don't have a government that is working for all of us. They're working for their own mates, people in the industries that they just want to pander to, and mega landlords. And this is why the Greens are fighting for a politics for all of us, which is why we're going to be, you know, continuing to push for taxing the wealthy few, adequate public services, and affordable housing, so that people do not need the accommodation supplement to begin with. I mean, the accommodation supplement, as much as people need it, is a sign that too many Kiwis have unaffordable housing. If you need the accommodation supplement, it literally means you have unaffordable housing. So the answer needs to go back to building affordable housing, lifting base incomes, so that we do not need these top-ups that literally are there only and only because people are living in affordable housing at the moment.
On those things of increasing base incomes and making housing affordable, what would be some key Green Party policy coming into the election that would...
Yeah, so we've long campaigned on building enough public housing and then expanding the criteria of who can live in public housing. Public housing doesn't just need to be for people who have been homeless. It could also be for teachers, nurses, students, and public housing guarantees that you don't pay more than 25% of your income on rent, which is why it's so important and it's a much better alternative to private housing. The other thing is that we've long campaigned on top of increasing housing supply for things like rent controls, so that incomes go up faster than the cost of rent, which should alleviate the need for more families to need the accommodation supplement to begin with, because their base incomes, wages, et cetera, are actually rising faster than the rents and accommodation costs are. And so this is why we launched a housing campaign earlier this year with a suite of policy proposals. And it actually is a better investment, because we are spending billions of the accommodation supplement. The more we build public housing and lift wages, the less we'll be relying on the accommodation supplement to ensure that people do not end up without a home.
What would you say to economists that would look at the New Zealand housing market and they'd say, you know, most of it is provided by private suppliers, and if we instituted something like rent controls onto that market, that would reduce the number of new builds that are being produced potentially? What would your response to that be, really?
But they don't have evidence for that.
Okay.
In all other countries that rent controls have happened, adequate rent controls, the only reason why rents have gone up eventually is because you remove those rent controls. So of course they're going to spike. So I think the answer here needs to be building enough public housing, increasing the supply of it. As a country, we have some of the lowest proportions of public housing compared to other comparable nations. And ultimately, the government actually has the ability to buy private housing when it's on sale to turn it into public housing. It's a worthwhile long-term investment in providing adequate, affordable housing. And the countries that have far more affordable housing, surprised that also have more public housing. And so this is why that needs to be part of the solution.
All right, moving to our last topic today. The New Zealand First Party released a few policies over the weekend. One of them gained a lot of attention in the media, and that was the quite radical proposal to buy BNZ and then merge it with Kiwi Bank. It's received a lot of pushback, not least from their own coalition partners in the National Party. I would love to know what your thoughts were on this policy.
Yeah, look, we absolutely support keeping public banks in the public hand. And I think one of the differences we have in New Zealand First is that we want to use Kiwi Bank to take on the big Australian-owned banks. And so this is why a capital injection to Kiwi Bank is a faster and cheaper way to deliver that very same outcome. I also want to note that New Zealand First is just not serious about building a publicly owned national bank, because while they've been at the cabinet table, they've literally have supported selling off and or toying with selling off public assets, including, for example, the sell-off of public housing, which we were just talked about. So I think this is all but a stunt to try and pretend that they're serious about taking big banks while not actually campaigning on capital injection to Kiwi Bank, which would deliver much faster outcomes to deal with the big Australian banks. So I think, you know, this is where we differ with New Zealand First on the proposal, but we agree with the principle that we need a publicly owned bank to take on banks that are taking the profits offshore and are putting profit over outcomes for everyday people.
With this idea that you feel that New Zealand First might not be that serious on this one, are there any other cases that you feel like their rhetoric or the policies that they claim to support would not seen within the outcomes?
Yeah, I mean, like, whether it's selling public housing to the highest bidder, whether it's allowing multimillionaires from offshore to be immediately granted residency to then proceed to basically put house prices up by just becoming property investors here and becoming multi-homeowners, the rhetoric does not match how they actually act in government. For all the talks about nationalizing and having good public services, their policies say completely otherwise. And they're a party that is also championing humongous amounts of job cuts to our very same public services. So again, I just don't think this is serious. And this is yet again another stunt by New Zealand First to pretend that they care about outcomes for everyday people when all their actions have shown that they would rather pander to offshore multinationals, whether it's through mining, whether it's through the selling of public housing, et cetera.
Surely there's a part of this which is being a minor party in coalition with a major party means that you get to make larger promises that can appeal to a base that may never have to be put through in government policy because the major party will never actually accept it.
I disagree with that, because if you look at the ACT Party, right, they got some transformative overhauls of our employment laws despite their size. And this is just parties needing to negotiate better. At the end of the day, I also think that, you know, if people like policy proposals, you know, the solution is to vote for the parties that are putting them forward, right? So a minor party is only a minor party as long as voters allow it to be the case. But I think in the case of New Zealand First around some of these promises, you know, the challenge is whether they'll actually fight for them at the coalition table and threaten to go back to the polls or to sit in the crossbenches should they not get their way. And if I look at the outcomes that New Zealand First or the ACT Party pushed extremely hard for, they have all been to either, for example, pander to a mega corporate like Uber so that they have continued to have power over our communities, something that New Zealand First voted for, or, you know, destroying our conservation land so that offshore companies that will take the profits offshore can wreck the natural environment. So once again, I go back to the fact that this is a matter of negotiation, this is a matter of actually pursuing a mandate, and I just simply don't think New Zealand First has the track record of delivering on promises of nationalising and bringing services into public ownership so that they put people, not profits, first.
All right. Well, I've taken up a lot of your time this morning, so thank you very, very much, Ricardo. It's always
a
pleasure.
No worries, Manuel. Appreciate it.
Ka kite.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez-March on the changes to the accommodation supplement eligibility, New Zealand First's proposal to buy BNZ, and the power of minor parties.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez-March.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.